Hey there, special educator. Before we dive into today's episode, I have something exciting to share with you. If you've ever struggled with writing impact statements for your IEPs, and let's be honest here, what special educator hasn't found themselves at some point staring at a blank box and a blinking cursor wondering what in the world to type? My free guide is just what you need to get those brain juices flowing. Introducing Impact Statement Mastery, your step-by-step guide to writing personalized IEPs. This free guide is designed to help you craft impactful, personalized statements with ease. You'll get expert tips and strategies, easy-to-follow formats, and real-life examples that bring theory to life. It's absolutely free and a must-have for every special education teacher and related service provider. To get your copy, just visit www.spedprepacademy.com/impactstatements or check the link in the episode description. Now let's get started with today's episode.
You're listening to the Sped Prep Academy podcast. Your host, Jennifer Hofferberg, is an award-winning veteran special educator who shares her experience, knowledge, and passion to help other special educators survive and thrive in this profession. Join her and other guests as they share tips and tricks of the trade for the ever-crazy, completely overwhelming, laugh-so-you-don't-cry profession of being a special education teacher.
Well, hey there, and welcome back to another episode of the Sped Prep Academy podcast. I'm your coach, Jennifer, and I'm here to help you navigate the challenging yet very rewarding field of special education. Don't forget to subscribe to the show so you can be reminded each time, each week when the episode goes live. And I'd love for you to leave a review. Your words help others find the podcast and learn from me as well. Today, we're focusing on a crucial time of the year for all of us, and that is spring IEP season. I just looked on my calendar and I have 13 IEPs scheduled for the next 2 weeks. Granted, I don't have to write all of those IEPs, but I do have to check over them and attend them, and that's a lot of meetings. So you might be wondering, what is IEP season? Because it might not be occurring in your district, but in a lot of districts, this is a season or a period during the year when a significant number of IEP meetings are scheduled and held. And there are several different reasons why we have so many IEPs in the spring. It could be that you are intentionally scheduling your meetings for this time because you've had most of the school year to be able to collect data and to assess students' progress, and you're ready to set goals for the upcoming school year. Spring IEP meetings allow parents and educators to plan for the next school year, ensuring that the supports and the accommodations and the correct services are all in place when a student returns after summer break. It could be that for students who are moving to a different school level, so they're moving from elementary to middle school or middle school to high school, this is a crucial time for teams to be holding transition meetings, which are those meetings where we're planning the support changes needed to go to a new school. You might be focusing on adapting the educational curriculum to align with the new environment and the new challenges. This could include discussions about classroom accommodations, any necessary changes to support services. And these meetings often involve a collaboration between the current school and the receiving school to ensure a smooth handover of information and strategies have been effective for the student. It's also an opportunity for the parents to meet the new staff and get kind of a feel for what it's going to be like next year. I know every parent can get a little bit nervous when their kid is moving from one school building to another, but I found in my experience that especially parents who have children with special needs, they get really, really nervous. And it's understandable because you've probably built a very strong relationship with that family. At least I hope you have. And you know, they're not ready to let you go yet. They know that you love their child and that you have their best interest in heart, at heart, and they don't know what the unknown is. So it gives everyone a chance to meet and collaborate for the benefit of the child. Another reason is that by spring, educators have accumulated nearly a whole year's worth of academic behavioral development data on a child. This information can be invaluable for making informed decisions during an IEP meeting. And so districts hold meetings at this time of the year to be able to discuss all that data. You might have all of your district tests, whether it's iReady data or iStation, any of that DIBELS data that your school district does, you're able to collect that from the fall, winter, and possibly even the spring now, and be able to set your goals based on that data. And it might be a summer services consideration. If a student has or needs extended school year or summer interventions, these are typically discussed during the spring IEP season so that you get a plan in place for their ESY services. It could also be that this is the time of year when you're getting many new referrals. If a student has been in a tiered system of support, it might be time that the team is wanting to refer for a special education evaluation. And so you might have some of those scheduled as well. And it might be that you had some of these last year. And so this is their normal annual IEP time as well. So there's just a whole lot of reasons that you could be having so many meetings right now. And on top of all of those IEP meetings, this time of the year is just busy in general, and we are having a lot on our plates. Not only are you trying to get all these IEPs done, but you're also dealing with spring fever behaviors. There's a lot of those going on right now. You're gearing up for different field trips. You are state testing. It's progress report time, and you're going to throw a spring break in there somewhere. So you've got just a lot happening at the same time. But for whatever reason, I have some tips to help you get through all of this sanely. Tip number one is to prioritize and plan. Effective planning is more than just writing your dates on a calendar. It involves a thorough assessment of each student's needs and preparing that documentation and aligning all of that with your school timelines. Now, I'm a very visual person. I have to be able to see it on a calendar. So I have my Google Calendar that pops up on my phone when I have a meeting coming up, but I need to see everything laid out on paper form for the whole month, or I have it up on my wall as well. But I need to see. I need to see when is Johnny's IEP due? When's Jesse's IEP due? When's Jennifer's IEP due? And then back it up so that I give myself time to make all of those little milestones before I get ready for that meeting. So I might break down the steps like, okay, I need to give Johnny just one more little probe to make sure he's met his goal. I need to talk to Jesse's mom to make sure that she's able to come. Whatever it is, you need to give yourself enough time to get everything completed. Tip number two is to streamline processes. Efficiency in documentation and preparation can save you immense time and energy. So what this might look like is, say you have five meetings within a month's time, I would get five different folders and keep them close by. And on the front of each one of those folders, I would put a sticky note with everything that I needed to do for that kid. And it's going to be similar for all five kids. So your sticky notes might say, send home the parent input form, send out the teacher input form, talk with the paraprofessionals to get data collection, finish the IEP, write the present levels, whatever it is, you're going to have it for all five kids. And so just work through each file in a systematic way so that you're not stressing at the last minute, or you're not waking up in the middle of the night thinking, did I send home Johnny's parent input form or was that Jesse's? If you have it there and you know that you're checking them off, you don't stress as much. Tip number three is to set boundaries. Boundary setting is really crucial to have a work-life balance. I want you to determine a time of day when you are going to transition from work mode to personal time mode. And this is going to look different for everyone. When I had girls at home, I hardly ever took IEP work home. I would work my tail off during the day. I'd either go in a little bit early or stay a little bit late so that I didn't have to take it home. But now that I'm an empty nester, I work all the time. I find work fun. And so it doesn't affect me. It doesn't affect my personal life. I can still watch Netflix and do work on the computer. And so you have to figure out what your balance is for you in your situation. But this might mean that you just turn off the email notifications on your phone so that you don't have them coming in. It could be that you have a designated workspace at home where you, I'm going to sit here for 30 minutes and do this work, and then I'm going to walk off and leave it so that I can go spend time with my family. Whatever it is, whatever you choose, you need to make sure and communicate those boundaries with your family members and your colleagues. And having these limits for yourself will ensure that you have time to recharge, which is vital for your well-being and your effectiveness as a teacher. I also make sure to set boundaries with my staff and let them know, hey, I have a whole bunch of IEPs that are coming up, and I'm going to need you to step up and help protect my plan time so that I can get my paperwork done and not be so stressed in the process. And to help you stay in that personal space mode whenever whenever you go from work to personal, it's crucial to list everything out and just get it out of your head and put it on a to-do list for tomorrow so that you can not be stressing about it and worrying about it. You've just gotten it out and onto paper and you know what you have, you know your plan for tomorrow. Tip number four is to delegate when possible. Delegation isn't just about offloading work. It's about building a supportive team. So you can identify tasks that your paraprofessionals can help you with or your other colleagues can help you with. For example, collaboration and preparing teaching materials. So if it's something that you typically do, you might be able to ask someone else to help you get that ready this week so that you can have extra time to work on paperwork. During this busy time, you really just need to depend on others to take some of your duties so that you can get stuff done, focus on IEPs, and make sure your staff understand that you aren't being a slacker, that you really do need their help, and that you are trusting them enough to handle things on their own. And this can really foster a more collaborative environment because they feel needed, they feel wanted, and they feel that they're making a difference to help you out. Tip number five is mindfulness breaks. Mindfulness is more than just a buzzword. It's a powerful tool to help manage stress. I want you to incorporate short mindfulness or meditation sessions into your daily routine, maybe in the morning when you first get up. This could be a guided meditation on your phone. This could be a spiritual meditation. It could just be some deep breathing exercises between meetings, or simply just taking a moment of quiet reflection for yourself. Mindfulness, whatever it is, it helps center your thoughts and it makes you more resilient to stress. Journaling is another form of mindfulness. And I love to write, but I've never been a big journaler. I'm more the person who talks things out. So I'm in my car in the morning or at the end of the day, and I'm processing things and getting things out of my brain so that I don't worry about them. And I like to reflect on what I accomplished that day. I'm usually pretty proud of myself for fitting so much into one day, and I'll call my daughters to brag about everything I got done during the day and how skilled I am. I'm not sure that they are as impressed by myself as I am, but hey, it makes me happy. So just make sure that you are mindful. Number six is physical activity. Physical activity is a proven stress reliever, but it doesn't have to be a rigorous workout. I'm not talking about an hour and a half long aerobic session or a yoga Pilates session. I'm talking about a 15-minute walk around your building, stretching exercises, light yoga. Some of these can just really significantly impact your mental and physical health. And I think it's important to schedule these because you're going to forget. You're going to be sitting at that computer and your shoulders are going to be tense and tight and you're going to be grumpy. If you will schedule these and let it pop up on your calendar, just like any other meeting, and make sure that you are getting them done, I think it's going to be a big game changer for you. Just make sure when you're stepping away from your computer that you remember to push save. On our system at my district, if you don't save, it doesn't save it automatically for you. So I don't want to be responsible for you losing all of that hard work. Tip number seven is to connect with peers. Never underestimate the power of a supportive community. Connecting with other special educators, whether it's in person or online, can be very beneficial. Share experiences, seek advice, offer support to someone else. Sometimes just knowing that others are in the same sinking ship as you are makes you feel a little bit better, like misery loves company. Like you're either going to get through it together or you're all going to go down on the ship. Sometimes we just need to know that others are there with us. Tip number eight is to celebrate small wins. In the midst of the busy IEP season, it's easy to overlook your achievements. I challenge you to celebrate the completion of an IEP by, going out and buying you your favorite drink or something, or celebrate even just a positive moment that you had with a student during the day. These celebrations, no matter how big or small, can boost your morale and your motivation. The other day, a teacher called and asked if she could send up a student who had earned the right to read to Tucker. He's our therapy dog. And just having him in my office for 15 minutes is a huge morale booster for me. And so that really just helped to rejuvenate my spirit, and it gave me a chance to step away from the drudgery of paperwork. And tip number nine is to utilize IEP tools. This last one is it actually makes the IEP writing process easier, whether it's goal banks or templates or sentence stems, just whatever you can find to help you get through that paperwork quickly. There's so many different tools out there that you can use to avoid recreating the wheel every time you have to write a new IEP. One of those tools that I use is the impact statement resources that I have that give you the words to use when you are writing impact statements for your PLAFs. This is an area where I always used to get hung up because I never felt like I made it sound professional enough. And no one ever taught me how to write these or what to actually put into the section or what the state was really wanting me to put into the section. So I did the research and I created this resource to bridge that gap for special education teachers. It guides you in crafting impactful, clear, professional sounding impact statements for your IEPs. And a well-written PLAF statement just sets the tone for the entire IEP. It helps you figure out what services you're going to provide, how many minutes you're going to provide, or what supports, what accommodations, modifications. It sets the tone for everything. And so getting really specific in this area is a benefit to being able to write the IEP quickly. If you are looking to enhance your skills in this area, I'd love for you to check out my free step-by-step guide to writing personalized IEPs. It's everything you need to effectively and confidently write IEP impact statements, and it's just right at your fingertips. So just go to www.spedprepacademy.com/impact-statements, and a free copy will just be sent right to your email. In this guide, you're going to find a wealth of information and practical examples to help you write effective impact statements. So let's recap those 9 tips again: prioritize and plan, streamline processes, set boundaries, delegate when possible, mindfulness breaks, physical activity, connect with peers, celebrate small wins, and utilize IEP tools. As we navigate the demands of IEP season, remember that your well-being is just as important as your professional responsibilities. Implementing these strategies can lead to a more balanced, fulfilling career in special education. So thank you for tuning in. I'd love for you to share this episode with colleagues if you found it beneficial. I bet they will too. Next week, Paul is back with me for another segment of Ask Us Anything. Remember, you can submit your questions by clicking the link in the show notes. See you next week. Thanks for sticking with me until the end. I can tell that you are just as dedicated to the field of special education as I am. If you liked what you heard today, I'd love it if you'd head over to spedprepacademy.com/podcast to check out the show notes and sign up to be notified each time a new episode airs. Go out and have an amazing day, and I'll catch you on the next episode.